This is Mark Sobel, U.S. Chair, OMFIF. I'm pleased to be joined for today's OMFIF podcast on the December FOMC meeting by Danny Tannengauser, Managing Director and Head of Market Strategy and Insights at Bank of New York Mellon. Danny has had a long and distinguished Wall Street career as a leading voice and analyst on foreign exchange matters. Indeed, I had the pleasure of meeting him many years ago when I was a government official. Welcome, Danny. The FOMC pretty much delivered on expectations. Ahead of the meeting, many FOMC members had clearly telegraphed that after three rate cuts earlier this year, the FOMC should be on hold. So it was. But sometimes a statement, forecasts, and press conference turn up a diamond in the rough. Was there anything about the decision, statement, forecast, or press conference that stood out? Was it a dovish, hawkish, or neutral statement? Or should we now say owlish?
I think that probably the main piece of news really has been a revision on the dots. And we were all expecting those dots to move and get closer and closer to market expectations. But the signal between September and December was very clear in the sense that a meaningful number of members now expect rates to remain unchanged throughout 2020. That in itself shows a convergence also on the so-called R-star, which is the kind of like the longest rate that you have in the dot plot, also coming a touch lower. The signal there is very clear. The Fed is going to be very patient before changing their current stance, which is a neutral stance, as they told us. Keeping that in mind, the inflation data coming in the morning was quite important because, again, we do have an environment where headline inflation overall is surprising on the upside in some countries. I mean, probably the eye of the storm here really is China, but we saw a touch of a surprise in the U.S. We're seeing inflation numbers coming a little bit higher than expected. So this is an environment where central banks will remain accommodative, even if headline inflation comes across higher than expected.
Well, let's turn to the real economy and let's delve into the current outlook a bit, especially since the Fed has stressed it will be data dependent. I did notice that the word that some of the uncertainties disappeared from the statement. And as you mentioned, the dot plot is pretty much now for unchanged rates over the next year. Meanwhile, in the eyes of the Fed, as recently stated by Lael Brainard, the outlook may well be for the economy to grow next year around or above potential. It seems as if services and consumption are holding up nicely, partly because of low unemployment and its impact in boosting disposable income. And despite global manufacturing declines, the impact of Trump's trade wars on commerce, investment, and uncertainty, the three rate cuts have seemingly provided sufficient insurance, at least for now. So do you agree with those characterizations, and what further thoughts do you have on the outlook, and what is your take on the FOMC suggesting it may be on hold for the entirety of next year?
So the best starting point is just to take kind of like a little bit of the other side of the trade, quote unquote, and what the market does have is an additional 25 basis points cut throughout the next 12 to 18 months or so. I'm not too sure the Fed actually likes that. So we are really in an environment where hopefully we might see some sort of steepening in the curve that might come across as both an adjustment in the front end of the rates, but also the back end moving perhaps for the 10-year back above 2%. And as the 10-year moves back above 2%, we might see a curve that is, I don't know, I'm looking at two stands, let's say at something around 50 basis points. And in that environment, the Fed will clearly be much more comfortable because if they do need to ease, they will be surprising the market. So my sense is I agree with the way you defined and you described the overall outlook for next year and how the FOMC sees that outlook. But it would be even better if that same 25 basis points of cuts were not priced in. So this is clearly one issue that would remain almost like a tug of war between the market and the members of the FOMC.
Of course, 25 basis points difference for 18-month period is not particularly large or significant.
That's true. It's not significant, but it's really the difference between a board or a committee that really would like the next move to really be a hike. So, you know, again, going back to the same mid-cycle easing narrative. So you're just adjusting mid-cycle, and then eventually you're going to go back to that same tightening bias that you had, let's say, a year, year and a half ago, and the market basically claiming, no, no, this is a proper easing cycle, and the next move is actually going to be a cut. So I agree that the actual magnitude is not that meaningful, the 25 basis points cut that you have in the market, but it's more about the narrative and the trajectory, right? With one side claiming, hey, we eased, but it was insurance, it was mid-cycle, there was a little bit of a hiccup when it comes to the data on the back of trade, of the trade war, as you mentioned, and the next move we'd like to have is a hike, and the market saying, no, 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 this is actually more serious than that, and the next thing is we need to cut, and then eventually we might have a quote-unquote a full-blown easing cycle.
Thank you for that. How do you see trade wars or dissipation of trade wars factoring in? I see that the 10-year rate is yield is up a bit, a good bit today. There have been some favorable remarks by the president on reaching a deal with China. On the other hand, even if there is a Brexit divorce deal, there's still going to need to be a Brexit settlement. There's going to be elections next year. There could be changes in terms of the trade rhetoric. Do you feel that uncertainty is priced in or will remain over the course of next year? Or do you see some of these trends perhaps on Brexit and trade improving?
So I would actually divide this question in three parts. The first part is the trade war will not go away anytime soon. Again, the direction of travel here is one where the United States, or at least the current administration, would like the rest of the world, but more particularly the emerging markets part of the global economy, to basically reduce tariffs. And the tool that the U.S. is using to push in that direction is by hiking tariffs on its own. The result of that same tug of war between the two sides has been a soft patch when it comes to activity. The reaction to that soft patch has been quite a significant wave of easing across the world throughout 2019. So we really saw pretty much every single central bank out there cutting interest rates and or easing throughout the entire year. So that's the first part. There is quite a bit of easing in the pipeline. Now, heading into the end of 2019, there are a few events that the market were expecting to act as hurdles to the market. And one of them is, as you mentioned, the December 15 tariffs. The second one is, again, you mentioned the UK Brexit situation. The third one could be defined the signing of the USMCA, so the NAFTA 2.0. Fourth, and as we begin the year, we're going to see more uncertainty around the US elections. Now, many of those events are now turning out to be more positive than negative to the market. And as a result, we believe that once we add quote-unquote, more positive news coming from the trade war, which we've seen over the past few days, together with all that easing, we expect actually inflation to go higher next year. And the reason why that will happen is because we're still in an environment of a trade war where bottlenecks exist. So a company that all of a sudden sees an improvement in the trade war would not necessarily change their strategy because they're still concerned whether the tariffs will come back or not. So this is something that, in our opinion, will drive inflation going forward. And so even if the recovery might be quite mellow, given the overall sentiment, that recovery should be substantial enough to drive global inflation higher. So it's almost kind of like, think about it as sort of a mini stagflationary environment, where essentially you drive growth stronger, but that drive does not need to be significantly stronger to raise inflation.
Well, let's turn to the foreign exchange markets, since that's your bread and butter. Of course, monetary policies in the U.S. abroad are key determinants of exchange rate movements and levels. So perhaps you could share your 2020 outlook with us a bit. How do you see the dollar, the euro, the RMB, and EM? And what's your underlying reasoning? And what are the big trends you might be looking for, and why is volatility being priced so low as the U.S. goes into presidential elections?
Let me start from the point where we ended the previous question, which is this environment where even a smaller fiscal / monetary impulse might have more meaningful inflation impact globally. We also think that that combined with the fact that we wouldn't expect the Fed to basically change policy stance for a long while should reduce real interest rates. And an environment of lower real interest rates, particularly in the US, should be negative to the dollar. So our bias really is towards a somewhat dollar weakness on the back of negative real interest rates. An environment of overall dollar weakness could be supported also by a positioning situation where the market has been consistently positioned for a U.S. equity market and to some extent even bond market outperformance against the rest of the world. As those things start to turn around, we might actually have a new direction or a new trade where investors are looking into doing a more significant overweight in the rest of the world vis-a-vis the U.S. So that's the direction that we're thinking, is that it's a broad-based dollar weakness environment on the back of lower real yields, and as a result, the euro would drift higher and the dollar weaker. The euro clearly will be very path-dependent on what happens with fiscal policy. So this goes back to the first point that I mentioned in my answer. We see that the green bonds could be quite important going forward. In fact, in a survey that we made out of a BNY Mellon investment management, between 48 to 49% of the respondents raised climate change as the next big mega trend around the world. So if I go back over the past, say, 30 years, the 1990s mega trend was the tech trend, and then the 2000s was the emerging market / commodities trend with the oil prices going higher. Our PMs expect actually the next mega trend to be climate change. Climate change in itself should actually push for green bonds, for more spending in green projects, which is something that is coming more and more to the forefront when it comes to the Eurozone, and that should be quite supportive to the euro in our opinion. This is part number one. Part number two is in an inflationary environment, we should see monetary policy stance changes. I'm not calling for hikes, but I'm saying monetary policy stance changes going forward. And that should start working as anchors for currencies around particularly emerging markets. So again, two very good examples, in my opinion, are the RBI and Chile in December. Those two central banks heading into their meetings in December, the market was priced for both of them to cut interest rates. The consensus was also mentioning cuts, expecting cuts and projecting those cuts. They did not deliver. And the reason why they have not delivered was because there was concerns around the higher inflation and higher inflation expectations. Again, we've seen a higher print in India as a result of food prices. For Chile, we haven't seen a jump in inflation, in headline inflation yet. But again, with the Chilean peso as weak as has been, we would expect inflation to go higher. They also have increased the fiscal imbalance quite a bit as a result of the street protests. So once you start adding those things to the equation, I wouldn't be surprised if we see more and more headlines, inflation headlines, to increase going forward. And that should turn monetary policy stances around the emerging market space and anchor those currencies. So it will really be a function of what happens to inflation in each one of those countries, right? Now, as all of that unfolds, I would expect actually term structures to start steepening. And this is something that, as you mentioned at the beginning of the call, the 10-year moved quite a bit today. And I think that's part of the plan. That's part of the scenario, of a scenario where essentially inflation expectations continue to recover, right? So we see, let's say, break-even inflation going from 170, 180, above 2%, which is a level that everyone would feel a lot more comfortable in the United States. And as a result, we will see more volatility. So the answer to your question on vol is that this is a year where I would expect an increase in actual and so basically realized and implied volatilities as a result of this increase in realized inflation.
I follow the RMB a bit. Any views on that?
Yeah, it's an interesting story because I do believe that the RMB is likely somewhat overvalued. I don't think it's extremely overvalued, but I do believe the RMB is overvalued. And the two drivers of that overvaluation is an external imbalance adjustment. Again, I think more long term, China has come from a pretty significant current account surplus 5-10 years ago to much closer to a current account balance these days. In the meantime, also, we've seen a push towards a more consumption-led growth rather than investment-led growth. Those two things usually tend to detriment currency valuations. So currencies tend to become overvalued in switches like that with current account imbalances and a more consumer-led growth story. But my sense is that that's the case also for the Chinese currency. So the push for dollar China higher will remain there. Clearly, they are uninterested to allow their currency to adjust, given that this is a very sensitive point when it comes to the trade discussions with the United States. And again, the imbalance and the valuation story is not as significant as to really push for significantly higher currency volatility. But again, that's the direction that we have in mind, is that the Chinese currency is overvalued.
Well, this is fantastic. I want to thank you for joining us today and providing us with so many excellent insights. I look forward to continuing the dialogue. Thank you, Danny Tengauser.